really, really try. I swear it, I say. And I know because of Prim, I'll have to. And then the peacekeeper is at the door, signaling our time is up and we're all hugging one another so hard it hurts. And all I'm saying is, I love you. I love you both. And they're saying it back. And then the peacekeeper orders them out and the door closes. I bury my head in one of the velvet pillows as if this can block the whole thing out. Someone else enters the room. And when I look up, I'm surprised to see it's the baker, Peeta Mellark's father. I can't believe he's come to visit me. After all, I'll be trying to kill his son soon. But we do know each other a bit, and he knows Prim even better. When she sells her goat cheeses at the hob, she puts two of them aside for him, and he gives her a generous amount of bread in return. We always wait to trade with him when his witch of a wife isn't around because he's so much nicer. I feel certain he would never have hit his son the way she did over the burned bread. But why has he come to see me? The baker sits awkwardly on the edge of one of the plush chairs. He's a big, broad-shouldered man with burn scars from years at the ovens. He must have just said goodbye to his son. He pulls a white paper package from his jacket pocket and holds it out to me. I open it and find cookies. These are a luxury we can never afford. Thank you, I say. The baker's not a very talkative man in the best of times, and today he has no words at all. I had some of your bread this morning. My friend Gail gave you a squirrel for it. He nods, as if remembering the squirrel. Not your best trade, I say. He shrugs, as if it couldn't possibly matter. Then I can't think of anything else, so we sit in silence until a peacemaker summons him. He rises and coughs to clear his throat. I'll keep an eye on the little girl, make sure she's eating. I feel some of the pressure in my chest lighten at his words. People deal with me, but they are genuinely fond of Prim. Maybe there will be enough fondness to keep her alive. My next guest is also unexpected. Madge walks straight to me. She is not weepy or evasive. Instead, there's an urgency about her tone that surprises me.
They let you wear one thing from your district in the arena, one thing to remind you of home. Will you wear this?
She holds out the circular gold pin that was on her dress earlier. I hadn't paid much attention to it before, but now I see it's a small bird in flight. Your pin, I say. Wearing a token from my district is about the last thing on my mind.
Here, I'll put it on your dress, all right?
Madge doesn't wait for an answer. She just leans in and fixes the bird to my dress.
Promise you'll wear it into the arena, Katniss? She asks. Promise?
Yes, I say. Cookies. A pin. I'm getting all kinds of gifts today. Madge gives me one more. A kiss on the cheek. Then she's gone, and I'm left thinking that maybe Madge really has been my friend all along. Finally, Gail is here, and maybe there is nothing romantic between us, but when he opens his arms, I don't hesitate to go into them. His body is familiar to me. The way it moves. The smell of wood smoke, even the sound of his heart beating, I know from quiet moments on a hunt. But this is the first time I really feel it, lean and hard-muscled against my own.
Listen, he says, getting a knife should be pretty easy, but you've got to get your hands on a bow. That's your best chance.
They don't always have bows, I say, thinking of the year there were only horrible spiked maces that the tributes had to bludgeon one another to death with.
Then make one, says Gail. Even a weak bow is better than no bow at all.
I've tried copying my father's bows with poor results. It's not that easy. Even he had to scrap his own work sometimes.
I don't even know if there'll be wood, I say. Another year they tossed everybody into a landscape of nothing but boulders and sand and scruffy bushes. I particularly hated that year. Many contestants were bitten by venomous snakes or went insane from thirst.
There's almost always some wood, Gail says. Since that year, half of them died of cold. Not much entertainment in that.
It's true. We spent one Hunger Games watching the players freeze to death at night. You could hardly see them because they were just huddled in balls and had no wood for fires or torches or anything. It was considered very anticlimactic in the capital, all those quiet, bloodless deaths. Since then, there's usually been wood to make fires.
Yes, there's usually some, I say. Katniss, it's just hunting.
You're the best hunter I know, says Gale. It's not just hunting, they're armed, they think, I say.
So do you. And you've had more practice, real practice, he says. You know how to kill.
Not people, I say.
How different can it be, really, says Gale grimly.
The awful thing is that if I can forget their people, it will be no different at all.
The peacekeepers are back too soon, and Gale asks for more time, but they're taking him away, and I start to panic. Don't let them starve, I cry out, clinging to his hand. I won't. You know I won't. Katniss, remember I...
He says, and they yank us apart and slam the door, and I'll never know what it was he wanted me to remember. It's a short ride from the Justice Building to the train station. I've never been in a car before. Rarely even ridden in wagons. In the seam, we travel on foot. I've been right not to cry. The station is swarming with reporters with their insect-like cameras trained directly on my face. But I've had a lot of practice at wiping my face clean of emotions, and I do this now. I catch a glimpse of myself on the television screen on the wall that's airing my arrival live, and feel gratified that I appear almost bored. Peeta Mellark, on the other hand, has obviously been crying, and interestingly enough, does not seem to be trying to cover it up. I immediately wonder if this will be his strategy in the games. To appear weak and frightened, to reassure the other tributes that he is no competition at all, and then come out fighting. This worked very well for a girl, Johanna Mason, from District 7 a few years back. She seemed like such a sniveling, cowardly fool that no one bothered about her until there were only a handful of contestants left. It turned out she could kill viciously. Pretty clever, the way she played it. But this seems an odd strategy for Peeta Mellark because he's a baker's son. All those years of having enough to eat and hauling bread trays around have made him broad-shouldered and strong. It will take an awful lot of weeping to convince anyone to overlook him. We have to stand for a few minutes in the doorway of the train while the cameras gobble up our images. Then we're allowed inside, and the doors close mercifully behind us. The train begins to move at once. The speed initially takes my breath away. Of course, I've never been on a train, as travel between the districts is forbidden, except for officially sanctioned duties. For us, that's mainly transporting coal. But this is no ordinary coal train. It's one of the high-speed capital models that average 250 miles per hour. Our journey to the capital will take less than a day. In school, they tell us the capital was built in a place once called the Rockies. District 12 was in a region known as Appalachia. Even hundreds of years ago, they mined coal here, which is why our miners have to dig so deep. Somehow it all comes back to coal at school. Besides basic reading and math, most of our instruction is coal-related, except for the weekly lecture on the history of Pan Am. It's mostly a lot of blather about what we owe the capital. I know there must be more than they're telling us, an actual account of what happened during the rebellion. But I don't spend much time thinking about it. Whatever the truth is, I don't see how it will help me get food on the table. The tribute train is fancier than even the room in the Justice Building. We are each given our own chambers that have a bedroom, a dressing area, and a private bathroom with hot and cold running water. We don't have hot water at home, unless we boil it. There are drawers filled with fine clothes, and Effie Trinket tells me to do anything I want, wear anything I want, everything is at my disposal. Just be ready for supper in an hour. I peel off my mother's blue dress and take a hot shower. I've never had a shower before.